Hello, you're very welcome to Triton Lake Perform. My name is Connor Smith, founder and CEO of Triton Lake, a global investment advisory business that connects investors with relevant investment opportunities. This year, we became the title sponsor of the Ireland Men's and Women's Sevens teams. This podcast will explore the intersections of sport and business, looking at what both worlds can learn from each other and what are the key parts to the puzzle of high performance. This week, we're delighted to welcome Billy Dardis to the podcast. Billy is the current captain of the Ireland Rugby Sevens team, an Olympian having represented Ireland at the Tokyo 2020 Olympic Games, and he's looking to lead the Ireland Sevens into a new chapter in the 2022 HSBC World Rugby Sevens Series. Billy, you're very welcome. Maybe a good starting point would be tell us a little bit about your Tokyo experience, and then we can jump into the journey to get there.
Yeah, I suppose firstly, thanks very much for having me. It's pretty cool when you think that we actually did get to Tokyo. To say you're an Olympian, not many people can say it, and achieving that feat was probably one of the most incredible kind of experiences in all our lives. And I suppose it was probably the journey to that point that made that moment of qualifying so special, that the kind of the Irish Sevens history of building right up from the basement to the penthouse, where we started off in Division C of Europe and played in some bizarre places like Bosnia, and I got my first cap over in Malmo in Sweden playing against Latvia, and to go through a few years of a few years of training on a lot of dark nights, maybe numbers. Sometimes we'd be training with 7 or 8 people, and lots of struggles. But to get to that point of qualifying in Monaco was an extremely special day. And to then go off to Tokyo and be in the Olympic Village with 11,000 of the most talented athletes on the planet was a pretty incredible experience.
And maybe go back to, I'm always curious, some of those earlier days in Bosnia and Malmo, and I can't imagine they're quite as maybe glamorous isn't the right word, but I've a picture in my head of muddy pitches and poor refereeing and those kind of things. How accurate is that version of what happened?
it's a bit of a case of a man and his dog watching the games. There's not many people there, and you're playing on back pitches. Played in Prague one time, and we got to a final, and playing against Ukraine in the final. Of course, they're all guns blazing. You're still pumping them by 50 points, but you have to keep the pressure on. And funnily enough, I remember standing on the pitch one time, they actually got a try, and someone on the side of the pitch, there was a stag do, it arrived to the side of the pitch, and someone on the stag came on and tackled one of their players running down the touchline. It was one of those kind of events where just anything goes kind of thing. So really glamorous fixtures. Yeah. But then you go and play in the likes of Hong Kong, and you're playing in front of 50,000 people, and it's the ultimate showpiece. And then to go to the Olympics, you come from one extreme to the next. And it is, sevens is crazy like that. We've had some brilliant times, but I think every great time that we've had, there's been a build up. There's been lots of tough training tournaments, like training sessions in the background that nobody really sees, real dark days. And I think that's kind of the tale of a lot of us, is that we've all kind of had our dark days and our tough times. We've all been let go from academies. We've found ourselves kind of being on the back end of some unfortunate kind of decisions and stuff like that. And I think for all the individuals on the squad, they all experienced that, and that build up to, in the lead up to that kind of ultimate
qualification. Maybe tell us a little bit about how you ended up with the Sevens.
Yeah, well, I would have got into the Leinster Academy system through school. So I went to school in Terenure College, and I was fortunate enough to be, it was probably one of the final people to go straight into the Leinster Academy from school. Spent 3 years in the academy and played Irish 20s. After my 2 years Irish 20s, I went to play Irish 7s. And that at the time, the Irish 7s was probably seen as a bit of a graveyard for rugby players. Because you kind of saw that guys who, it wasn't looking like they were going to push on and play professionally in the Pro 14, they were going to get taken with the 7s. So at the time, I was saying no to it. Like, I didn't want anything
felt
to do
like
with
a demotion.
It. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. You're kind of looking at it thinking, that's only going to end badly for me. And so I did hold off, but then I got stuck into it around the time we tried to qualify for Rio. And we actually played in Monaco, funnily enough, in the qualifying tournament for Rio, lost in the quarterfinal to Spain, which we actually should have won. Spain went on and won the tournament, qualified for Rio. So that was my first real taste of it. I then went back to Leinster. I was on my first year with the senior team as a development player. And first preseason game, I'd come fresh off the seven, so I felt a little bit fitter. And first preseason game, we're playing Ulster, running down the touchline. I actually was playing kind of well, running down the touchline, went to offload it inside, and Jacob Stockdale jumped on my back, landed on my arm, outstretched, and dislocated my shoulder. And that was me until probably February. And Stuart Lancaster joined in September, October. And so immediately I was kind of on the back foot. I wasn't training in front of him, and got back around February of 2017. Was playing well, but never got a contract. And it was probably, at the time I was disgusted, and for years it stuck with me. But at the time it was probably a fair reflection of where I was at as a rugby player. And shortly after that, I met Anthony for a chat and a coffee. And he spoke about the opportunities coming up in sevens, about qualifying for the World Series and what that would mean in terms of the traveling, the rugby, coming up against the best players in the world in sevens, going to all the most glamorous locations on the planet, following the sun around the world. And I had a few options to go over to the UK and play championship and stuff like that. And I think the sun in Dubai kind of was a bit more attractive to me. And that's how I kind of got back involved with the sevens. And we were lucky enough to go to a World Cup in San Francisco the following year. Failed to qualify for the World Series on our first attempt in Hong Kong, but then got it the next year. And we've been involved. I've been involved in some great days, from coming third in our first tournament in Twickenham. When you're playing England in Twickenham in front of 60,000-70,000 people, and managed to pull out a bronze medal out of our first World Series event. And then we went to San Francisco, played in a World Cup in AT&T Park, the baseball stadium, and it was absolutely insane. Just crazy. You walk into those stadiums and you just look up and the stand is just upwards. It's like a coliseum, and it was just an incredible. That was one of my favorite weekends because all the families and friends were there. And we actually won a challenge trophy. We beat Australia in a ninth place final. It's funny, we were running after the pitch. We still got a trophy for winning this challenge trophy, but we remember running down to the Irish fans and celebrating. And of course, Toppers, James Toppings, our coach, was like, get off the bloody pitch, for God's sake. You didn't bleed and win the World Cup. Like, it was, we were celebrating like we won the World Cup. Yeah. But it was just one of those, it was the end of a tough year, and it felt like we'd won the World Cup. And then about 10 months later, we qualified for the World Series. And then failed to qualify for the Olympics, but there was kind of a roller coaster of 2 years where we qualified for the World Series and went through COVID, and then at the end of COVID was the qualifier for the Olympics.
Yeah, it feels like you only just got going in that first full season in the World Series, and it was drawn to a halt obviously with COVID. So there must be a fair bit of anticipation as we go into next season.
Yeah, it was crazy seeing the fixture list come out about a month or two ago. It was incredible just thinking that, geez, there's actually going to be a full year, 10 legs of the World Series. It's incredible. You go to the most incredible places, like Dubai, then we're going to Malaga and Seville, LA, Vancouver, London, Paris, Hong Kong, Singapore. Like, seeing all of that ahead of us over the next 10 months, and with that added carrot of the World Cup in Cape Town next September, it's just incredibly exciting. And after that kind of period during COVID of no traveling, training by yourself a lot of the time, and having to push yourself into a dark place by yourself and listen to the sound of your own breath in a park with people just walking around, walking their dog, watching you, wondering what the hell you're doing. It's a little bit of a reward, and it's something really to look forward to.
Yeah, no, big time. The role as captain, is that something that happened early on in your sevens career, or did that evolve after a while?
When I first came into the setup, Tom Daly was captain, so he's now the centre at 12 in Connacht. He would have been captain for kind of a season and a half, like two summers. And then when I got back involved, when I was kind of at the end of my Leinster career, I was one of the senior players at the time, because there was a turnover of players each year. Just the nature of sevens, you have guys coming in from the academy, play for a few months, and then they'll bounce back into the 15 setup. So I was kind of one of the only people that hung around. There's a group of, they call them the OGs and sevens, the guys that stuck with it right from Bosnia tournament one and are still here. But I suppose I was one of a guy who had come from the academy and was still in the setup. And there was the likes of Hugh O'Keenan, Jimmy O'Brien, Will Connors, Nick Timoney, guys like that who were only starting their sevens career. And I suppose I had a little bit of experience having tried to qualify for Rio. So when I came back and we were playing a little bit, I suppose I kind of was a bit of a leader. I would have been a bit of a leader throughout my childhood playing rugby, with a captain junior cup teams, a little bit at senior cup. But I suppose then when Anthony asked me to be the captain for the sevens, it's a different kind of role because you're obviously managing adults. And at the time he kind of talked about it being not too much in it, just being a link man between the players and coaches. But I suppose as it has evolved and there's a lot more to it in terms of player management, coach management, I suppose the biggest thing is obviously like managing relationships between the staff and the players, being that link, having a good relationship with all of them. There's the on-field stuff. But I suppose I focused on it so much in the first few years of it that it's now become a habit, and I just kind of live that kind of stuff every day. And it's a role I actually really enjoy because I'm someone that, not that I love control, but I like being able to kind of make sure things are done right. And I know everyone thinks they know the right way.
Influence outcomes, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It feels like beyond the linking between the coach and the players, the nature of sevens is you're compressing a lot of highs and lows into a much shorter period of time.
Yeah.
And there's obviously a people aspect to that where you're, you know, encouraging, and the bad things might happen that you're having to help people get back on their feet and immediately concentrate again, right? So more so than 15s, I would say. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Oh, sevens is a roller coaster. Yeah. So you play six games in a weekend. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, you could lose your first game and then you're playing another game in 2 hours' time. So you have to get up for it. Mm. It is incredibly emotionally draining as well as physically. Tournament days or tournament weekends can be quite demanding like that. Mm. But I suppose I am lucky enough that over the last few years I've had a good kind of support team in the squad. Because there is only 12 of you, and we had a decent amount of experience going into Monaco and the Olympics, that everyone kind of knew what worked for them. So as I kind of described it towards the tail end of last year, is that I nearly just became a spokesperson for the guys, that I would lead by my actions, by example, what I did. And that would just be the simple things of being early to things and working on my extras, making sure everything's in place and all those simple little things. It became pretty simple, but it's only in the last few months am I realizing that you have to do a lot more in terms of managing what a program looks like. And that's kind of the new thing, is trying to influence what the sevens program is going to look like in the future. So it leaves a kind of a legacy. There is systems and structures there that guys can come into, and there is a set sevens picture, there's an image of a sevens player. I think that's the new thing in our leadership group.
No, it makes sense as well. Yeah. One thing you touched on there that I want to come back to, the physical toll that sevens, it's a different preparation. It's, you know, you're playing a game, you're having a break for 2 or 3 hours, you're playing six games in a weekend, you're traveling all over the world. How do you prepare yourself physically for that aspect?
When I came from 15s to sevens, it was certainly a shock, because it's the game itself is incredibly fast. It's a test of your aerobic and anaerobic systems. You have to be extremely aerobically fit, but at the same time be able to repeatedly exert powerful efforts. So each game you do get to that point where the lactic acid in your legs is a joke, and you can't really take it, and your head's screaming. And on top of that, you have the pressures of a game in front of you with 50,000 people screaming. So it's just all go. So in terms of in-game, it's incredibly demanding. But then there is that added pressure of you have to do that six times in a weekend. You have to come up and down. You have to recover after each game and then prepare for the next, which can be like physically prepare, but also make sure you're in the right mindset and make sure you've got the right food on board. And you're essentially carb loading for 3 or 4 days. So it is, it's incredibly tough on the body. But I suppose you do have to, the training that we do is to prepare us for it. Like the training we do, like 15s guys would look and be like, geez, that's insane. The meters you cover, like we'd cover an awful lot of high speed meters. So in 15s rugby, you would cover a lot of distance in a game. You might cover 5 or 6K, and maybe 400 meters of that would be at a high speed, like a really high speed above 60-70% kind of thing. Whereas we would cover in one game out of six on a weekend, we might cover 1-1.5K, but for 300-400 of that might be at high speed.
Okay.
It's a lot faster.
Yeah.
So our training sessions would try and replicate that somewhat. So our meters per minute, you'd look to cover on average about 120 meters per minute.
Yeah.
Whereas in 15s, if you cover 70 meters per minute, you're doing really well, kind of thing. So it's, we have to try and replicate what we do at matches in training. So we might do that twice in one day. So we'd have two training sessions in one day on like a Thursday, and you'd go hard on both. And a lot of the thing then is how you're able to back that up on the Friday, how you're able to come in, how your body feels the next day. And I think there's the element of how fit you are on the pitch sometimes, but there's also the element of how well you can repeat it. And a lot of the time when guys come into sevens, their bodies break down.
So I was just going to say, it must be a shock to the system when
new
guys
shock.
Come in.
New guys come in and like whatever about the pace, they might be able to do that for one session, but try and do that two times on the Thursday and then one time on the Friday. And that's where their bodies really break down.
Yeah.
So it is, you burn up the calories and you find yourself in good shape pretty quickly. You guys seem to drop a lot of fat very quick, which is brilliant, especially when you're traveling the world and the sunny locations on the beaches.
Yeah. And, you know, as well as the physical side, obviously you need to be in a mental position to be able to make decisions and quick decisions on the pitch. Is that something I suppose that's more instinctive once you're in the game, or are you planning ahead? I mean, I know obviously depending on who you're playing, you're going to have a game plan. But how much of it when you're in the moment?
Yeah, when I came in 15s, you would do an awful lot of tactical planning. You would, off each scrum, we know what we're going to do. Off every lineout, we know what we're going to do. And in this moment, you know you're going to work around the corner. It's fairly prescribed. In sevens, every moment is completely different. And I wouldn't focus too much on game tactics and strategies as per se, but every moment you got to win it in front of your face, and you got to be prepared for everything. I wouldn't look into whether, like, if I'm coming up against an opposition player, whether he steps right or left. You got to expect that he's able to do both.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is going off instinct, and I think the only way you build up that instinct is through habits and doing it repeatedly in training. So there is only so much you can train for, and then once you get on the pitch, you just got to be able to react in the moment. I'm in that high pressure when there's 50,000 people in front of you, you're absolutely out on your feet. It can be pretty tough, and that's what sets the best players apart. When everyone's tired, everyone's absolutely out on their feet, people are walking around the pitch, it's those players that can think clearly in the moment, who can breathe, keep their eyes up, scan, communicate really well, tell people what to do. They're the best players in the world, and they're able to see things a bit quicker and make better decisions. I think that's always such a point of difference, as someone who is able to think clearly in the moment. That helps them to make good decisions on the pitch.
Mm-hmm. If we think about off the pitch, I guess, and there's lots of learnings here, and I often think about the parallels between Triton Lake and the Sevens program and the reasons we got involved and everything else. But part of it was very much around the growth mindset and the thinking, you know, the planning and the preparation and everything that goes into that, right? It feels to me like there's lots of parallels between elite sports and high performing businesses. What would you say the key learnings are? from the Seven side that you would apply to, say, your management consultancy side of things?
There's lots, I suppose, in just going from general sport in general to working everyday life, being a bit like working in businesses and whatever. I think the main thing from Sevens is you build up a good attitude for working hard. I think anyone who comes into our program learns very quickly that you thought you might have been working hard until you came into Sevens, and that's when you have to, it's working hard, but also when you're finding it really tough to keep going again. And I suppose then, like, when you go into the working world, I've kind of learned, or even when I was doing my master's, it's probably my best examples is when you are a little bit tired, but you need something to get done, and that's when you actually switch on. That's where your real point of difference is, that you're able to keep going and dig in and get your work done. I think people in team sports, they're just ultimate team players, and Sevens, you have to be. There's the seven guys on the pitch covering a pitch, what was it, 70 meters by 100 meters. So you got to work together. You can't do it alone. And that's, whether that's communication, how you talk to people, letting people know what you're doing, like responsibility, like helping each other out, like supporting each other. And I've found that when I come to, whether it's my master's or working, that it's helping other people out. Like, oh, you need help with that? Like, oh, yeah, more than happy to help you. Or like managing your workload, like being able to say to someone, yeah, I'll get to that. I'm doing this at the moment, but I'll get to it as soon as I can. There's lots of stuff. That transferability is incredible. And I think rugby players are only starting to really realize how transferable their skills are from sport, from elite environments, high pressure environments, to the business world. And I think obviously it takes a few years to make that transition, but it's certainly the skills in sport are extremely valuable.
No, that makes sense. In terms of the relationship with the coaches then, I mean, I know you mentioned earlier on, you act as a link almost between the two. That would almost suggest an us and them, right? With the between the coaching team and the players.
Yeah.
How difficult is it to walk that line, I guess? And obviously you can't be too buddy-buddy with the players, and you need to have some level of respect and understanding of, you know, the levels of authority and so on. How do you manage that side?
Yeah, that's the... sometimes can seem like a bit of a, not a chore, but a downside of it is that you are that link, and you're not going to make everyone happy all the time. Sometimes I felt like, geez, I don't have a best friend in Sevens, because I am the link between I'm an extension of management. And so guys can be a little bit conscious of that. Like, my players can be a little bit conscious that, oh, Billy's a bit of part of management here, so I can't say something, or he can't know something here. So you have to walk the line a little bit, and there is an element of trust in it, that the guys, like the players, do have to trust you. They have to know that what they're telling you is confidential, and I have to sometimes make the decision whether I think, yeah, that, like, that's to stay between me and that player, or I think management should know this because it's going to make the team better. Sometimes you have to think about what's actually going to benefit the team, what's the right thing for the team, versus what's the right thing for the player. Sometimes that can be, like, as captain, I have to have a relationship with every player. That's something I would like to think I'm quite personable. I can build up good relationships with people. I can sense what each person needs. And Sevens, with the diverse kind of nature of each player in our team, there's such a diverse group that I have to be able to know what works for every player, what makes them tick.
And what works in the system, right? Because they might be a brilliant 15s player, but there just isn't a place in a seven system for them to perform to their potential.
Yeah. A lot of the time, players come from the 15s. It's about, like, you know, they're talented. It's about helping them to see that they can fit in if they just go for it and use what they have. Like, they are talented, so just go and do what you do best. Don't overthink it. But it's more so from personality points of view that you're able to connect with them and know what works for them, and then link that with what Anthony's thinking and make sure it fits into the system and the plans and stuff like that. And it's even tougher when the demands of sevens are added to that, that you have to think about everything. It's coming from all angles. But managing those relationships that link, it is trying to find that alignment between the coaches and the players. So it's just a two-way system that it's coming from both sides, and not making it an us versus them ultimately, I suppose.
Yeah. You touched a little bit on preparation. I guess the other side of it is the motivation aspect, right? And obviously you started at the basement level, as you described it, but you had a few knockbacks along the way. So not qualifying for Rio, not winning the qualification tournament in 2018 in Hong Kong. How do you pick yourselves back up after that and get going again? And you know, even now, having got to the Olympics, how do you get the mindset right going into a new season and as motivated as you were those 5 years ago or 6 years ago?
Everyone spoke before Tokyo of the come down from the Olympics. The analogy that Everest, that what goes up must come down, and obviously coming down from Everest is is the dangerous part of climbing Everest. And I suppose that became a reality, I suppose, over the last few months of what next after reaching that pinnacle, after like you ultimately reach the top level of a sport. It doesn't get much bigger, I suppose. In rugby you can play for 15s in Ireland or whatever, but trying to find what next, I think, to kind of add to what qualities the rugby players have and what sports people can have, is that idea of setting your eyes on a goal, finding what can drive you. I think over the last, all throughout COVID, I think everyone found it tough, but we became individual athletes over that kind of 9-10 month period, and what the only thing that was driving me through every session was the Olympics, getting to the Olympics. It was just, everything was focused on that. Like, I wanted it more than anything. So that's my big motivator. I know it's probably not, people say not to focus on outcomes, but I was very much like, if I put the work in here, I'll get what I deserve. I'll get what I want if I work as hard as I can. And that was what pushed me every day to work as hard as I could when it was raining, dark, 5 a.m., 6 a.m. when you're waking up to go training. That's what pushes you to get up. When I was by myself, training by myself, knowing that, geez, this is going to be dark, I just kind of knew, okay, if I put this work in now, I'll put myself in a better position to qualify and get what I want. And at the time, all throughout the Olympics, I was also doing my master's, so I was balancing my studies. And it was similar. I kind of set that goal of, I want a first class honours in my master's in Smurfit. So it kind of gives you a structure. It makes your choices really easy. It makes your lifestyle choices really easy. Makes your decisions on whether I should stay in on a Friday night or get up, or go out, whether to get up early on a Saturday morning and put in a 9-hour study shift, whether to get up early on a Sunday morning and do my kicking as early as I can so I can get my study done afterwards before I go out for a walk on a Sunday afternoon to reset. It makes all those choices really easy when you have a goal, something to focus your mind on, I've always kind of found. And that is what I'm thinking these days, is what am I going to focus my mind on now? After getting to the Olympics, so much for the last 2 years was on the Olympics and on my master's, that I'm now like, okay, what is now going to drive me? What's going to excite me? What am I going to think of that feels like it's out of reach, but I know if I can work as hard as I can that I can get there. And there's lots of things in my mind. There's obviously the medal in Paris.
Yeah.
Seeing the rowers and Kelly Harrington, the buzz around getting a medal at the Olympics after seeing that, it's just how, like, I talked about at the time when we qualified how cool it was to qualify. But I remember David News 4 saying, if you think it's cool qualifying, imagine how special it would be to win a medal. So that's trying to get my head around that, wrap my head around that, and see that that could be possible if we get the right systems and structures in place in sevens. To think that could be possible, that you could do something as special as that is pretty motivating now.
No, exactly. Just in terms of wrapping up, I guess, from where we are now, one thing that, you know, we like to ask is, you know, was there ever a great piece of advice that someone gave you, or if you could give some advice now to a younger Billy Dardis, what would that be?
Yeah, I had to think about this, and I've often thought about what was it that clicked with me when I was younger that drove me to be who I am today. And I suppose a good one is when we were in school, I was in school with Tim Schmidt, who's Joe Schmidt's son, and every year at our jersey presentation, Joe Schmidt would come in and give this rousing speech that would get everyone going in the lead up to the Senior Cup. And he always spoke very well, but he'd always finish with a bit of a challenge. He'd challenge you to do something, and he loved to pull out this Aristotle quote, and it was, "You are what you repeatedly do, therefore excellence becomes not an art but a habit." I think it there's a lot of meanings to it, but for me it was consistency, like what you do every day, it adds up to something in the end, and it means a lot of different things to me. It's just being consistent with your habits and working hard. Just making right decisions. That's kind of another one that my coach would have taught me, that, yeah, you're an extremely talented rugby player, but the classy players, the best players in the world, always make the right decisions. And that's pretty general in saying the right decisions, but it's doing the right thing at the right time. Not being selfish, making other people look good. They're the people that do best in sport, but in life, I think. So they were probably the two best things for me, and that's in sport and in life and in my kind of career outside of rugby, that it's consistency of the right decisions, the right actions. I suppose, yeah, I've had some tough days and a lot of stuff that I wish had have gone differently in rugby, but to now say that I'm Olympian, it's
to have had that opportunity.
It's a roller coaster, and I've got to somewhere pretty cool that I'm pretty happy about. So to my younger self, it'd just be to trust the process and to work as hard as you can, but also to take every opportunity. I think that's something when I was younger, when I was in my 20s, early 20s, playing under 20s in Ireland or whatever, I didn't quite take those opportunities and didn't take the opportunities that I had. Should have been a little bit more selfish than I was, but to work as hard as you can and to take every opportunity that comes your way.
That's great. Thanks very much, Billy. That was a great chat. Really enjoyed it. Good luck at the weekend in Dubai, and good luck at the season ahead. And we look forward to talking to you soon.